This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3702 for Tuesday, the 11th of October, 2022. Today's show is entitled Easter Og. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 62 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, from Scotland, another chat between Mr. X and Dave Morris.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Morris here speaking, and I have a companion with me who we've done this a few times. Mr. X is on the line, and we're going to have a wee chat. So how are you doing, Mr. X?
Yes, hello, everybody. Yes, I'm doing fine here. Just coming to the tail end of a fortnight's holiday, and it's been a very, very nice, one of the best holidays, nice and relaxing. I felt I really needed it this time, you know, so it's been good. So
yeah, it's good to have it's really important to have a break, isn't it? That if you can get away from the hubbub of work or whatever, it's very important.
Yes. Well, we were away. We went to visit some relatives. We meet up every year in the Lake District. That was lovely, and the weather was really nice. It feels like every time we've been away or done anything, the weather's been rubbish. You know, we've been so unlucky this year, it feels. But this last fortnight's been great. And even back home, although the weather was a bit cooler, and I think maybe across the country it got a bit cooler, it was still pretty good, you know. So I had a smashing time. So it makes all the difference when the weather's nice, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very much so. My son, when he was a student at Heriot Watt University close by, he made quite a lot of friends amongst the other students. One guy is a Greek guy who's here with his wife. I'm not sure if they've moved to Edinburgh, but he was really interested in seeing bits of Scotland. So my son Tim and his girlfriend and the Greek couple went to the Loch Lomond area. It was the weekend before last, and the camping, you know, with tents and all that sort of good stuff. And
fun.
It absolutely chucked it down with rain.
Oh no,
so
that's awful.
They still had a good time. It didn't rain all the time, but they did have some pretty heavy rain. But Scotland, that is the way.
Yes, it is, and I'm sure I've told the story before about us up that way and fitting a tent inside out, and then got soaked in the inside and all that.
No.
It was dreadful.
Oh,
yeah,
that's grim. Yeah.
Because we couldn't get the poles to fit. They won't fit. Why won't they fit? You know. Oh no, it's in the wrong way around, and it's chucking it down the whole day.
No, yeah.
I'm sure I've told this story before. So.
I've heard people say if you have a tent, especially if you don't know the tent, it's not yours, maybe you borrowed it or something, or it's new, then you really should rehearse it in your back garden.
Yes.
I discovered that the hard way too.
All good fun, yes. So, So we're actually just back yesterday. We visited Stockbridge Market. We've been walking along the Water of Leith. That's a lovely place, really nice. I can't believe I've lived my whole life in this area, never been down the Water of Leith and Stockbridge Market and whatnot. So we were visiting Stock Market yesterday, and it was a bit smaller than I thought, but very nice merchandise, very, very posh. And then we went for a walk along the Water of Leith. But we got back, we were just left about, oh, I don't know, maybe about 3 o'clock or something like that. And of course, we know what's happened in Britain, you know, the Queen died. So we've, there was big gatherings of people and police on the bridges and stuff. So I think we got out just in time before it got, you know, very bad. So.
There's all sorts of warnings out on Twitter and whatever. I get messages from the bus app on my phone saying, The centre of Edinburgh is more or less closed and will be for days, you know, so it's really hard to get through and stuff. So
this is it. So we're actually very lucky, because I ended up using my phone to send. It seems a bit daft using that to get directions, but took a strange route in and an even stranger route out. But it actually seemed to avoid all that. We virtually never got held up at all. So that I thought, it's like having a local taxi driver in your back pocket sort of thing, you know. So that was very useful.
Yes, that's great, isn't it? Yeah, I know. I drove to Liverpool for an old camp a few years ago, and I was just getting in. I'm really slow in getting into phones and stuff, but I'd taken my phone with me and I had it plugged into my car, which is supposed to produce a USB charge. But something went wrong, and the phone suddenly went, I'm out of charge, I can't do it. And there I was, just on the outskirts of Liverpool, thinking, it's going to be easy to find my way to the hotel.
No. Yeah. Well. I mean, I'm much slower to this than you, because I've only had a smartphone less than a year now. Up until then, I had an old Nokia, so it's kind of new to me. And obviously, when you're navigating with the phone, it does chew through batteries a bit quicker than if you're not using it. But we've got an old Garmin GPS head unit thing, which I tend to use when I'm going journeys and whatnot. But so we're coming back from the Lake District, we used that to come back, and my God, it took us a very strange route, you know. it was a good bit slower as well, or going through single track roads, and it was horrendous. I thought, should have used my phone. So yeah, it was rubbish.
Yeah. Oh, that's grim, isn't it? I have used maps to do that sort of journey. I think I went to Lancaster, it's a bit south of the Lake District, years and years ago for a conference thing, and I drove down, and I thought, I'll take a different route back, I'll avoid the motorway, because it was, I think it was April and there was still snow around, and it was potential icy, and I took I went over one of the hills, Shapfell, I think you can drive through. And that was the worst choice I ever made. I nearly got stuck in a snowdrift that was blowing off the fields. It wasn't actually snowing, but there were several people were stuck in it.
Yeah,
I managed to get past.
I think the thing is, we had our relatives behind us in the car behind, and so we were leading, and I should have known, because we turned off and they carried on, and I'm guessing their road took them straight to the motorway and then back home, you know. I should have done the same, you know. So they're saying, why are they going that way? You know, following my GPS, it knows where it's going.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Because you think, it must know a clever route that I don't know. You know, this is obviously a good way to go. Nope.
It's where you hear all these tales of people being misled by GPS. Maybe in the days, you know, a few years ago. I used to walk to work down an old lane. There's a lane that goes alongside fields and stuff from close to my house. It's called Donkey Lane, because I think it was a drover's road from years ago, where people used to take animals in for market and stuff. And it crosses the railway line, and that's only for pedestrians. But I encountered a big trailer lorry sort of stuck down there. His GPS had told him to get to the place the other side of the railway, he could go this way. he was very puzzled about how to find the place the other side of the railway line.
I think on a previous, I should have known better, actually, because on a previous route to the Lake District, we ended up in this, it got increasingly narrower and narrower, the track, and there was sheep on each side and cows, and it got to the point where we weren't sure we could carry on. It was I think it even came off tarmac and was on, like, you know, just rubble basically, and furrows in the field where a Land Rover might go, you know. It's just getting really dodgy. And we met this chap in the field, and he said, does this go to, it goes that way. And I'm like, but you could see the look at his face, and why the hell are you going this way to get there, you know.
yeah It's fun, that sort of thing. In quotes, I think that fun.
Yeah.
It's an interesting experience. You need a four wheel drive in some place.
Yeah. So we put up a list of topics to talk about, and I just added one here this morning actually, because we tend to always talk about this. So have you had any DIY issues this period?
DIY issues, wow. Domestic stuff and stuff related to the house. I just got my house painted, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Right, this is a semi-detached house, but it's a Scottish style, I think pretty much Scottish style, let me tell you why I think that. Because a lot of the outside of it is has been mortared, and then stones have been chucked on it, Scotland is called harling.
Could you explain that? You assume it ever, I'm quite bad for assuming people know what things mean. Of course.
In England, it's called pebble dash. The difference is that, and you do see it that way in Scotland. I mean, on places like old castles and that sort of stuff, it is pebbles, you know, like beach pebbles, small rounded things. But on the houses here, they must have got some sort of hardcore material to use. They must have had, maybe they got pebbles and then they put them through a machine that crushed them. So it's all, the mortar is embedded with these bits of stone, some of which are like razors.
So if you ever
walk past and knock into it, a bare arm or something, you will end up with several cuts.
Absolutely. We've got a very, very narrow, pathway that goes between the back of the house and front of the house, and obviously the whole stone side of the wall is as harling as you talk about it, and it is sharp. I'm trying to avoid it, and also we have to bring the buckets around from the front to the back, and there's a tap, an outside tap on the outside of the wall, and I've caught that a few, because you're carrying this bucket and you're pulling it from behind, you're looking forward and it's behind you, and you're conscious that the tap's there, but sometimes you forget and you catch it. So that was one of the things I was going to lead on to, that I now have a leaky outside tap. So I must have banged it. So I had a go at fixing that, took it to bits. Because Mrs. X was making the tea and all that, and she said, "Oh, how long will you be?" "Oh, it'll just be 10 minutes or so." Had the spanners out and all that. And I had an olive that I got for these. An olive is a plumber's fitting, isn't it, for sealing two pieces of pipe together, sort of thing. It compresses it and makes a seal. So I had some olives that I thought I could put into it to replace the one that was, I assumed, was damaged. But when I opened it up, there wasn't an olive in it, and it didn't have, you know, it wasn't the right shape for it. So I don't know how it works, how it seals. But I just at that point gave up. You know, I don't know what this is all about. I'll put it all back together again. And the pipe position had moved, and the leak had reduced greatly. So it's just a tiny, tiny weep now, so it's an awful lot better. And I thought, that's it, I'm not doing any more than that. That's the end of it, you know.
I've got an outside tap as well, which you can't turn it off enough. I think it just needs a new washer in the valve, but it's not a thing I want to do.
Well, funny you should say that, because we had a tap in the bathroom that was, you could hear, kind of, in the middle of the night, what the hell is that? You know, and it's getting tighter and tighter to try and turn it off. So this needs to get looked at. And I was going to, getting the top off was a pain in the backside. And I was looking at YouTube videos, and they were saying, you know, if you can't get this off, maybe you should just call a plumber, you know, because that's the easiest bit to do. So I couldn't even get that off, you know. So I eventually managed to get it off. I actually could use kind of mole grippy things, and I managed to not really damage it too much. And then there's a kind of, when you take the top off, the actual bit that you put your hand on, below that is a kind of a cover that you've got to unscrew. Now it's not how do you explain it? It's curved. It gets narrow at the top, and it's very shiny. So there's nothing to grab onto. So how do you grab the thing? And I tried using plier things with the paper around about it and whatnot. I sat to mark the tap. I thought, I'm not going to do any more of that because I'll just wreck it. And I asked a colleague at work, and he had this kind of rubbery thing, which I thought it was a car tool, but it turned out that it was actually for removing like tight lids or whatever. But anyway, this took off. So that was the biggest obstacle. And then you've actually got to get to where you think the washer would be, and people say, well, you know, it could be very tight, and you've got to support the tap because you can you can twist it, and then you'll split the piping underneath the you know. So yeah, so I was expecting that to be really difficult. So that was supposed to be the hardest bit, but that was actually quite straightforward. So I got that out, and then again talking to my colleague who gave me the tool, he says, "How old's your tap?" I said, "Oh, it's such and such." He says, "Well, that's a modern tap. That won't have a washer. It'll be a whole new module." Module? What do you mean module? So it turns out you've got this whole insert bit which has got the washer in it, but you can't take it out. And so I took that down to the plum centre place down at bottom, down in Dalkeith, basically local place. And I said, "Have you got one of these?" Not even knowing what you call it. He said, "Oh yes." He said, "Well, they're all different shapes and sizes." I said, "What?" So he had this box with all these wee boxes and compartments, different diameters, different depths, and even the stock at the top's at different sizes. And they said to me, "Now, do you have the screw?" I said, "Oh yeah, I've got the screw." So he put the screw for it back in the box. So I got it back to the house, went to fit it, and although my screw fits, it comes loose. I thought, damn, I should have taken the screw. Oh, what a nuisance. But eventually I got it replaced, and what a difference it now turns off. But what a pain. You'd think it would be a dead easy job, you know, just to change a washer and that. Yeah, well, I guess that's, yeah. Oh, madness.
It used to be easier. I have done this living in sort of flats and that sort of stuff in the past. I had bought myself a few tools for doing this type of stuff, there was a point where you could insert a tool into the tap and just grind the base where the washer sits. I don't know quite why it got eroded, but that was a thing you recommended to do to get a better fit for a new washer. And then you put your new washer in and everything's wonderful. You know, you don't grind it much, but just to smooth it out a bit or whatever. Maybe,
right.
I don't know if you get a build-up of corrosion on it or something. But
yeah,
but that's not the way anymore. It's all, you have to buy a new one.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mrs. X said, "Oh, we'll just get a new tap." I'm not buying a new tap. It's a perfectly good tap. It's a attempt to get it fixed, you know. But it did work. It's all working now, and it's very light pressure to seal it now. Very pleased it got
that's
there
good.
In the end.
That's good. Yeah.
But, you know, although I'm kicking myself for not taking the silly wee brass screw that came with it, you know, because the one I've got doesn't quite, although it nips up tight enough, you can't put any pressure on it or it comes loose again, so it's mm-hmm. obviously not quite mm-hmm. the same size, you know, but not, it's good enough. It's good enough. So that's the main thing.
I had a tap in my kitchen that was it was a weird design where there was a sort of plastic thing over the top of the bit that moved to you know, the two taps either side of a single
outlet, those kinds,
and the plastic thing detached itself from the metal bit underneath, and I sort of bodged it in all manner of ways. I just drilled holes in it and put screw in to sort of jam it in tighter until I just completely drove myself mad. I had plumbers in doing gas boiler work, and I said, "Guys, can you just fit me into whatever, so hopefully it won't cost too much, but can you just replace that bloody tap?" Which they did, and it's, whoa, what a difference it makes.
Yeah, sometimes it's just worth biting the bullet and getting it done properly. Yeah, you know, this is it.
It took me all of about 15 minutes to do, you know.
That's right. Well, we had a disaster at my mother's house where we touched a valve and it all went everywhere, and it started to leak and whatnot. And I'll make it very short because we could talk about obviously DIY forever. But it turned out that you can just tighten a nut on the front of the valve, and that seals it up again. Of course, not having any plumbing experience, I didn't know that. And the plumber said, "Maybe you should just get a plumber in next time." My mother said, "Yeah, but that costs £100.
Yeah. quite a lot of them around these parts. If you call them out outside normal hours, they will do you a, you know, you get an extra call out charge. So you can be looking at a fair bit of cash just to get somebody in to,
that's right.
Unbung your drain or something.
Yeah, you could probably, it's probably if you're that way inclined, a pretty good profession to get into. There's probably a lot of call for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
I guess just as you get older, you know, your knees and whatnot, and your flexibility to sort of do that kind of work maybe become a problem, I suppose. But I'm sure I heard a story about was it a chap who was a research scientist or something, and he was talking to this gas fitter, and it turned out the gas fitter was making more money than him. He said, "I'm in the wrong profession here. I think he did change." There was a story about that, and he changed profession. Mm-hmm. Very happy.
It has been the case for a few years now, I think, that if you, because I was indoctrinated as a kid, and I say that deliberately, because the message was, go to school, work hard, pass all your exams, if you can go to university, and come out of there, and you know the world's your oyster, you can earn tons of money. Don't go down the trade route, you know, you don't want to be doing all that sort of lucky and, you know, and being out in the weather and all this sort of stuff. And but that's not true anymore.
No,
it was a sort of prejudicial thing, I suspect.
Maybe, yeah.
The tradespeople in this region here where I live, there's several of them up and down the street here, they're doing really, really well.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure they are. Ah, dear. So we've actually not really got into any of our topics yet, so maybe we should go to topic one.
Sorry, I'm coughing because I'm laughing. Topic number one was that we were just going to talk about COVID and the fact that everybody that has, how shall I put this, a vested interest in it having gone away is telling us that it's gone away, but it hasn't.
You can
vouch for that yourself. No, I believe
yes. Well, we went to we were on holiday. We went to the St. Bees, it was. But before we went, now up until that point, we'd been very, very careful and done all the right things and kept away from people and wore masks and blah, 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 blah. And we were invited to a wedding. Now, we're not the most social people in the first place anyway, but so we went to this wedding, and I mean, I didn't know anybody at this wedding, but it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed myself. I thought, you know, got a wee drink, chat with people, and of course there's Kayleigh's hello goodbye for, you know, swapping hands. So Kayleigh's, how would you describe a Kayleigh, Dave?
Yeah, when I was at school, right, in the 1950s, then, you know, primary school, we all did Scottish country dancing, as it was called, and it was, a lot of it was those sorts of dances, you know, around a structured thing around a circle or whatever, around a room. So you need to have been there.
So you imagine you've got 50 people in a ring and you're swapping hands, hello, how do you do, hello goodbye, swapping all these partners as you go around, touching hands continuously. And I think, well, obviously we know what's going to happen. I mean, if I hadn't got COVID, I would have been, you know, I'm utterly amazed, you know. So yes, I got COVID. But what amazed me was that my wife didn't. So I don't quite understand how that was. And, you know, we ended up going to St. Bees, and then I started having symptoms and whatnot, and then tested positive. But she didn't test positive and remained negative. And we stayed in the same small apartment, and although we were in the car, we had the windows down when we could, and it was cold and blowy and windy. We couldn't, some things we couldn't do, because although a lot of our stuff we do in holiday is outdoors anyway, because we've got a dog, we couldn't go into any houses or, you know, cafes, because obviously I had COVID and didn't want to infect anybody. There was a beautiful wee railway station, something like, oh, I was like, set back in history, a beautiful wee station, and we looked forward to go onto that. We'd planned to go on that. I couldn't do that either because, again, I didn't want to pass it on COVID to anybody. But we made the most of it. But what I can't understand is how my wife never caught it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard all sorts of discussions about, you know, the relative susceptibility of people. I think it boils down to different people have different immune systems, you know. It's built differently, but it's had different experiences. I listened to an immunology podcast, which I don't fully understand, I have to say, but it, you know, sort of picking up a little bit along the way. They were talking about how COVID is a coronavirus, and coronaviruses are pretty common. And in fact, there's several, I think, at least one anyway, which is responsible for the things that we call colds. So if you've had a cold, this is the argument, if you've had a cold in the not too distant past, then mm-hmm. Your immune system might well be set up to attack coronaviruses more effectively.
That's fascinating. I hadn't heard that. That would make sense. Yeah, of course.
I don't think any research has been done into that specifically. Not as yet, because there's still tons to do to understand COVID itself and anything, you know, all the variants and how to deal with those. Yeah. But definitely some of the things I'm hearing from that sort of route, the virology and the immunology route, is that your immune system will actually go and, you know, having been exposed to viruses, it will not only recognize the aspects of the virus that were immediately presented, but there seems to be some sort of process which, once the antibodies have gone and that sort of stuff, your immune system is still sitting there cogitating on what it's seen. And there was some talk of it actually being able to predict, if you like to put it that way, some of the variants that might occur. So people were being less affected once their immune systems were primed, to less affected by some of the variants, if, you know, if they've been vaccinated particularly.
That's fascinating. You know, it's I'd never heard that. That's something to bear in mind.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't know. I've not had a cold for what seems like a very, very long time. So yeah, that may be the case. And I wouldn't be surprised if my wife has had the cold, and whether that's got any bearing on it, who knows? But it's very interesting.
Well, it might also be a genetic thing. You know, you might just have a different metabolism in some ways. I don't really know.
Yeah, did they not say they were looking at for people who hadn't caught COVID and thought they should have, or something like that, and they want to study why these people seemed not to be so susceptible, perhaps? I don't think they were looking for people like that, I believe.
Yes, I think so. I've only heard sort of speculation about it. I don't have enough time really to follow it up in any great detail, but these are some of the impressions I've got. I did buy a book on immunology, but it sat on the shelf in the other room, so I haven't actually opened it yet.
Right.
I will get to it soon.
Is it quite deep reading, is it? Or
No, it's actually a book, you know, it's a sort of glossy-ish sort of book. I think it's designed for students starting up in the subject. But, you know, I think I will find that it's a bit, sort of thing you don't want to read too much in one go, because you need to sort of sit and think what the hell does this mean?
What does that mean?
Some research around it and stuff. But it was a recommendation from the immunology podcast I listened to for students, really. So I thought I'd give it a shot. But it's just sat there staring at me.
Well, because the thing is, you're talking about when you were talking about how possibly having a cold might train the virus, and how it doesn't need to be the exact same virus for it to be primed or whatever. I mean, I remember having a discussion with somebody about the flu jab and saying the very same thing, because they say to me, they don't always get the right flu jab anyway, so what's the point? I said, well, it's not like that at all, because even if they do get the wrong one, it still gives protection. So it doesn't need to be an exact match to be effective. And even if it just reduces the numbers, it's still worthwhile doing. But on that vein, you know, thinking about that, we think about the fact that we had no flu, there wasn't a flu outbreak basically last Christmas, and you think, well, what we're doing now, it's almost kind of guarantees we're going to have, you know. And then on top of that, we're taking no precautions for COVID. It sounds like a bit of a recipe for a disaster to my thinking,
well,
you know.
I know. It's the lack of masks everywhere when the actual number of infections is really, really high. I've stopped watching as much of the sort of day-by-day statistics about COVID, but I do follow the Zoe group, ZOE,
right.
Who are based in London, and they're doing, I signed up for them. You could send in your health status, and they would you know, whether you had tests and what the results were and all that sort of stuff. So they do some quite good statistics. In fact, they're more up to date than the government statistics in a lot of ways.
I think I've heard of them.
They were saying that the number of cases, in other words, people catching it as you did, but not having a particularly bad time of it, was massive. It was higher at one point in the past month or two than it had been at the worst time in the early stages, you know.
Right. But, well, I mean, for myself, it was a bit shivering, achy, wee bit. I went to bed a little bit in the cottage, for an odd hour or something like that. But other than that, I managed to stay up, and you know, I didn't need to go to my bed and stay in bed, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And a wee bit of a cough. The cough seemed to get worse towards the end, actually, and I strangely seemed to lose the taste of mint tea, which is a bit strange. I thought we had faulty, bad tea, and it turned out that it wasn't. It was the fact I'd lost the taste of it, and even now I don't have it fully back, I don't think, but my taste hasn't been changed in any other way that I can perceive, which is very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my colleague at work, he had was it something like salt and vinegar crisps, and he took one and it tasted awful, putrid, and he thought, oh, I've got a horrible bag here that's off, and then delved into his cupboard and found an old one from an old batch that he'd had, and they tasted exactly the same. And then he realised, it must be, it must be COVID. It's changed the flavour of salt and vinegar crisps. It's bizarre, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'd certainly heard that story from many people. My son and his girlfriend had COVID since we last talked, which was in May, by the way. And they were both a little bit under the weather for a couple of days, but they soon rallied. They didn't get much in the way of taste things. It just affects different people different ways, I think.
Yes.
But I've certainly heard of a lot of people saying that they have that.
Yeah, I mean, I could have easily missed it if I hadn't taken mint tea. I used to take mint tea in the morning, sort of thing. But before I start work, then I wouldn't have noticed, I think, really. I like we're talking about the lack of masks. So when we were at the St. Bees and the Lake District, there's no mask wearing virtually, almost none, and work is the same. Nobody wears a mask, even though it's official company policy that when you're moving around you should be wearing a mask. But it gets to the stage where I was one of the last ones to. I still wore mine towards, a wee bit longer than most people did. It comes to the point when you're the only person doing it, and you get self-conscious, which is daft.
Yeah.
A colleague of mine, he went even further, and he I think he still occasionally wears it, but it's right, and it's so unnecessary. I liked I had a week quote here, which there was somebody on a a site I was reading that was suggesting, well, you get over it and just you got to learn to live with this, blah, 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 blah. And so this site was Richard Murphy, who does the tax research. He's big on fair taxation and whatnot. And he said, his comment was, now, was it, why do you think we should live with excess deaths of maybe 1,000 a week and 10% or more of hospital beds taken up by COVID, helping create a massive cancer crisis? How is that living with this? Isn't it more like killing people when simple things like wearing a decent mask compulsorily and requiring decent ventilation could solve so much of this? And it's true, absolutely true. It was so simple to, you know, and you could still have normal day-to-day living without lockdowns and stuff, but it's just crazy.
Yeah. And it's also quite bad for people who have immune compromise.
Yes,
because, you know, it means that the COVID virus is around everywhere. And it's really, really hard to get away from it. However much you yourself mask, the masks are not 100% impermeable or anything like that. And so you stand a much greater chance of being able of catching it and it being damaging to you if you absolutely don't have the immune system to deal with it. You know,
it's just crazy. But that's the decisions that have been made. You know, so
I did go out and buy a pack of the what they call K something 95s.
KN95s,
which is a tighter, more enclosing mask.
I
wear one when I'm on the bus and when I go to the supermarket and stuff. But I've managed to stay free, but I don't go out much.
We still don't. I mean, a lot of the stuff we do is outdoors anyway, because obviously got the dog. And when we go shopping, we do click and collect, which means we go to outdoors where the car park is, and they basically hand the food out and just place it in the back of your car. So we don't regularly go into shops, although I did go shopping recently out of pure desperation, because it's just getting silly now. My clothes are getting so old and so holy that it's getting embarrassing, really. So, and trying to get clothes to fit, oh my God, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. I've recently, this year, I got given, I take tablets for diabetes, I've got type 2 diabetes, and they give you all sorts of weird and wonderful tablets to control your sugar level and all that business. But they gave me a new one that just recently out, I think, which not only helps to control your blood sugar levels, but it also makes you lose weight. So since I started, which was tail end of last year, maybe, mm-hmm. I've lost about 10 kilos, which is quite a lot. None of my clothes fit anymore.
Oh, crikey. Oh, no, so you're in a similar situation. Oh, no.
So I need a big belt to stop my trousers falling down.
Do you know, we've got, so we have kind of clean rooms in the factory where we work, and they've got these lockers, and they're a bit like the lockers you get in swimming pools where you turn the key and you can take your locker out, but they're very thin, narrow lockers that hold one of these garments that you place over. It's a bit like this garments that a dentist might wear, you know, it's a kind of light blue thing. And so they had a stack of these from floor to ceiling, and there must be like, I don't know, 20 or 30 slots from floor to ceiling, each one having a garment in it. And well, they used to so they have various sizes, you see. And I was looking, and at the very, very top, the very, very first one you open up is small. And then the next one down was medium. I think there was two slots for medium. And then there was about three or four for large. There's about 10 for extra large and about 15 for extra, extra large. I thought, that's sick.
Yeah, that tells you something, doesn't it?
But you know, but the thing is, when I go shopping, it seems to be the same. It's you'll get one medium, one or two mediums. If you're very, very lucky, you might see a small, but it's nearly all mediums. And well, it's not all mediums, it's odd medium, lots of larges, even more extra large. It's exactly like in a factory. So it's, yeah, it's infuriating. You know, it's basically, if I can get any small sizes at all and they fit, I just take them regardless, because it's a little choice, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I was happy to find, because I'm a terrible hoarder. I tend not to throw things away, and I had a pair of trousers that I couldn't really comfortably fit in anymore, because I'd put on, my weight was a bit high, and I put them away thinking, well, maybe I'll. And they fit me perfectly.
Yeah, very good.
So that was a good move, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a good move, yeah. Yeah. I'd do the very same. I'm just exactly the same. On that vein, funny you should say that. So we visited when we were on holiday. We've been, you know, I guess holiday, you do visit more places and do more things. I have been doing, and we visited IKEA, which is everyone must know what IKEA is, surely. How do you describe IKEA?
I think it's everywhere, isn't it? It's all across the world. But yeah.
So I don't need to explain what IKEA is. So went to IKEA and we got a unit that, because Mrs. X said, oh, well, you know, we could put one of these units underneath in the wardrobe, you know, she was fed up with the stuff lying in the bottom of the wardrobe. She first told me about it. I've got the same unit, the one she proposed, where I've got my printer and router and various species. And I said, oh, you're mad, that'll never fit. What are you talking about? Said, yes, it will, try it. Said, no, it won't. I took the measuring tape out, and I took the measurements, went back to the wardrobe, and I couldn't believe it just fitted. Because you're right, it does fit. My apologies, you are quite correct. So, do you know what, quite fancy one too. So we got two, and we had an awful job. It just fitted with, you know, about 2 or 3 millimeters to spare, just to squeeze it in. We got them both in. But anyway, the point I'm making is when I was doing that, I was clearing out my side of the wardrobe, and I came across this big box, and I knew it had some bits and pieces in it. It had, six Cyan 3Cs. Cyan organizers, yes, Cyan organizers in various states of disrepair. In fact, one of them was just the motherboard, and I had a note on it saying that I'd replaced it with my existing motherboard back in 2012. I thought, well, what use are these now? So I've now gone from 7 Cyans down to one that works and sits inside my bed. The rest got chucked out. So
Which one is it that you're talking about, the organizer? Because we had them at work. I think they were made available to us. We had the ones with a keyboard in a sort of thing that slid up, that it would come up. You pulled a sort of sheath off and there was a keyboard underneath it. Was it anything like that?
So the 5C is the one where the keyboard comes out a little bit, moves out a little bit. Whereas the 3C is the one before that, the keyboard doesn't come out, but I think the button bar rotated. Something clever happened with the button bar. I preferred the 3. I think it was a better size compromise. I also didn't like the fact that 5, the battery lasted about a week, whereas the 3 lasted about 3 or 4 months, something like that, you know?
Yeah, I was saying earlier, I'm not sure if it got recorded or not, I was saying that at work we had some of the original Scions, which was like a sort of calculator shaped thing with a sleeve metal.
I had one of those thing. Yes,
and we used those, so maybe you had one or two that we could use in various contexts. But then we bought for people some of the fold-up ones.
I
had two of them here. I gave one to a guy at Ogcamp, because there was a guy who was really, he did an HBR show on refurbishing it and getting it working and stuff.
I don't remember that.
Was that Scion 3? I can't remember what it was. These numbers fall out of my head really fast.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a 3. There was quite a few. There was a 3A. There was certainly a 3C, but there was a 3 as well. And I had I think it was the 2 was the one that was like it's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on the TV program that slides up, so I think a character thing. Funny enough, when I got that Cyan 2, the one that's like the calculator thing that slides up, the At the time, prior to that, I had an Atari Dip portfolio, I think it was called, which was a bit like a Cyan 3C. It was way before that, and it was an 8080 or some sort of PC processor run an early version of DOS. It was rubbish. It kept crashing and losing stuff. So you would load contacts into it, and it would crash. You'd lose everything and have to load it again. So, and it was quite an expensive thing. It was over £120, which was a lot of money back then. And I sold that, and I got an old second-hand Cyan 2, which was much more basic, much cheaper. I mean, it was a fraction of the cost, and it could only do capital letters. It couldn't do lowercase, or it was a very primitive display. And I thought it was going to be rubbish, and I discovered it was fantastic, and it never ever crashed, never ever lost a bit of information. So, you know, it shows you that the software that goes with the device is as important, if not more important, than the actual hardware. The Atari was really sophisticated, but was rubbish, whereas the Cyan software was just so good. Mm-hmm. And of course, all the Cyan software was terrific. You know, very very clever.
Yeah, I just checked actually, and the one I had was a 5, Cyan 5,
I think they were kind of forced to take that route because of the pressure from Microsoft, because they were coming out with their Windows CE machine or something like that, which I believe that Bill Gates had said to one of the team, you know, when the 3C came out, that had the kind of, because it did fold the keyboard at some degree, he said, well, you know, why did you not do that? Well, because didn't think it was possible, was the answer. But in retrospect, they were maybe too clever, because all the 3Cs, everyone I've got, has got a broken hinge. They all failed eventually.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened to the 5, one of the 5s I have. I just kept it for spares and that sort of stuff.
Because
the screen just is killed because the ribbon cable between the main unit and the screen gets destroyed.
That's what happened. I got a Nokia N810. Klaatu had one as well. I loved it. Lovely wee device. I think it ran the Symbian, or a variant of the Symbian operating system, which was what the Cyan ran, I believe. I think. I could be wrong. No, I'm getting confused about that. But anyway, you know, you could SSH from it, SSH into it. So I could SSH into my server or whatever and start and stop my podcasts, which is how I used to do things. But it slid in and out the keyboard, and of course eventually the ribbon cable, and that failed. And I looked at somebody wrote an instruction how to replace it, and it was a nightmare to replace. Got it all back together again, and everything seemed fine, but it still had the same fault. So I never got to the bottom of it. I probably still got it in the drawer somewhere, you know, but yeah, it's useless. So yeah, it's obviously sliding these keyboards in and out, they do eventually fail, and that's a weakness, isn't it, really?
I saw a thing on eBay some number of years ago where there was a Nokia, one of the little hinge open devices, which is really sort of an organizer. I can't remember what model it was. It wasn't a phone.
Right.
As far as I recall, anyway.
It wasn't one of those. It's a flat, very thin flat tablet. Maybe the size of a credit card. I'm not quite sure. It's quite small anyway. And you've got the keyboard under. And you slide it forward, and so the screen goes forward, and it shows the keyboard, flat keyboard underneath. So it's almost like two halves, one slides up, sort of thing. And they say you could run. I'm sure they'd done something like Linux on it, and it was you could SSH in and out of it, sort of thing. And it was. I was very sad when it used a stylus to. You take the stylus outside and touched it to control things. So to launch the terminal program, for example, you needed to use the stylus. And when that stopped working, it made it difficult. And then I just thought, well, there's no point. I just gave up on the thing, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah. There were some nice devices around, though, in those sort of times.
So, and there was a determined effort to get rid of keyboards, wasn't it? Everyone had to go touchscreen. Yeah. And then what broke the mold, of course, was a triple E PC with the small laptop, which I've still got mine. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I've got a what was it, 1100 or something? Is it?
Yeah. I can't remember it either.
It's in a bag, through in the other room. Actually, I was saying, there were people talking about putting BSD on things.
I've always wondered
about playing with BSD. And Claudio Miranda, who's, you know him, he does stuff on HBR from time to time. He has a Triple E PC, and he put one of the BSD flavors on it. So I was thinking that would be quite cool to play with. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I did at the time when I got the thing, I did a few tweaks and changes to it and whatnot, but I kept the original Linux that was on the Triple E PC. I did see different versions, and there was like an Ubuntu version. There's a whole slew of different versions, I think, in its heyday. But the thing I didn't like about it is that the boot times were so much slower than the original one, because it boots really quickly. And for my use to use it to control audio playing and all that, I wanted it to come up quite quickly.
Yep.
So I kept it. So I still, the only thing I use it for is occasionally to SSH into my Pi to move a track up or down or delete something but I don't use it terribly often. But that's all I use it for. But even for that, it's immensely useful, you know. So
yeah. I must go and wake up my Triple E PC. Actually, now you said that it would be. I actually installed Crunchbang.
Crunchbang. Yes,
and that
that's
worked
right.
beautifully on there. It was really really nice.
Right.
I there was a point after I retired, I set up a small business of doing a bit of consultancy work, and I ended up doing a few consultancy jobs back at my old place of work, and which just seems a bit strange, but anyway. And I used to use that as my sort of portable, I didn't have a full-size laptop, but it was quite adequate for taking the site and then plugging a monitor into it.
Absolutely.
And possibly even plugging a separate keyboard into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, it's not the most powerful thing in the world, but then for doing a bit of editing of something locally and then dropping it onto the client's system, it works absolutely perfectly.
I mean, I think the battery in mine is completely goose. If I unplug it, I think it turns off in about 30 seconds. It's so bad, the battery now, but so it's always on mains. But it's very very usable. It's a real shame. And I remember that Crunchbang. That's right. I think that was going to be the one that I was thinking most to put on the Triple E PC. In the end, I ended up not doing it. That's right. I'd forgotten about that. I miss Crunchbang, I must admit. I think I had that on one of my other laptops as well.
It was great. I was very, very sad when it disappeared. That was Philip Newborough, who did a few HBR shows for us in the past. Life gets in the way.
It's a
big task.
Of course it is,
managing. Not entirely himself, I think, but he, a lot of it was on his shoulders. So
yeah, of course, of course, him. Full understandable. Yeah, it's a shame. So so we've not really got through very many of our topics yet. What have we got? One maybe. Is it? Not quite sure.
Half of number two. I've written down Scion and stuff on that one. Yeah. So we sort of done some of it.
Done a bit of that.
I'm just getting messages from my son. So I've got Telegram on this machine with the sound turned off. And he's in Barcelona at the moment with his girlfriend.
Oh, right.
And
right.
He just said, it's too hot, 31 degrees here, 70% humidity.
Wow.
He wants to be back in Scotland again.
Well, I'd rather have the heat myself. I love the heat. I've said before, I was born in the wrong country. I'm always flaming cold. When we were driving to the market yesterday, I was saying to the to my sex. So my hands have gone cold again, because I think what happens is when it gets below a certain temperature and it's not that cool, it's still quite warm, then the blood flow must stop and my hands go cold. I think I've got quite bad circulation in my hands. So the rest of me can be fine, but my hands just get cold. Very strange.
It happens. I go for a periodic blood test, and they just take a, you know, little pinprick and take a drop of blood to do it. But they check my hand temperature, and sometimes I go in there and say, "Oh, your hands a bit cold. You should need to just warm them up a bit before we can reliably get the drop of blood that is needed by the machine." So it happens. It happens. I don't know quite what I do.
Yeah. What you mentioned Telegram. I mean, I've heard. I don't do any social type stuff, but what actually, I've heard, obviously heard of Telegram, but what actually, can you describe what Telegram actually is? I must not know what Telegram is.
Well, it's a social network, and it's really a messaging app which you can join for free, and you can make your own groupings. We have a family channel that both my kids and my son's girlfriend are on, and myself, and we you know,
it's just one of these sort of things, just like the whole host of these sort of things.
Matrix, it's like WhatsApp, it's like all of these things. We moved away from WhatsApp to Telegram because we just didn't like the whole WhatsApp thing. That's owned by Facebook, isn't it?
I can understand that. I do use WhatsApp, but I understand where you're coming from.
But it does the same sort of thing. You can send pictures over it, and you can send audio, you can send video, and all that sort of stuff. I've got two phones, would you believe? I've got an old smartphone, a OnePlus One, which I use for podcasts, but I've got Telegram running on that, and my newer phone on there as well. So when I get a message, it goes to my desktop one and to my phone, and the phones think, "Oh, we better tell him that guy on the desktop over there." So I get pop-ups from that, and I'm using KDE Connect, which does that.
I remember that.
I get told the phones bleep, the messages pop up, so I don't miss much. Unless I want to, that is.
No. Well, it's better that than missing something. Absolutely.
Telegram's pretty good. I don't know any particular downsides. I don't know. Is it run out of Russia, though? I'm not sure.
Is it?
I don't know. Ooh. I don't actually know the details of it.
I've heard people mention it, but I knew absolutely nothing about it. So
it's. I'm doing a thing I usually vow not to do, which is there's an app. I'm using the app because it gives me what I need to be able to talk to my family, who are not going to be on Matrix anytime, and I don't want to be on Facebook. And quite what the background of it all is, I've sort of ignored, I guess, you know. So
that maybe we look in Wikipedia, perhaps, see what they say about it.
Yeah. I've been avoiding doing that in case it says don't use it, and then I have to unplug.
I do really like Wikipedia. It's such an invaluable resource, you know. I tried to make sure I give them something at the sort of towards Christmas time, sort of thing. Because
it's one of the worthy projects out there that you really feel you want to help out.
Yeah, absolutely.
One and the Internet Archive both.
Internet Archive. From. Yes. Yes, good point. Very good point. Absolutely. Yes, of course. Yeah.
So, do you think, because we've been going now for about an hour in real time, we'll probably hopefully be somewhat shorter when we make the final recording, but not a vast lot, I suspect. Do you feel that maybe now is the time to wind down?
I think it probably is before all the listeners fall asleep, so I think I'm talking with all rubbish. Yeah, I suppose
it's a bit like the New Year show. Bazillion things to talk about, which I enjoy them enormously. I haven't haven't heard the latest one.
Still pending
in my queue.
I'm way behind. I think because of the holiday and all that.
I don't know
who is it that I should really know, but who is it that's responsible for pulling it together and getting the show other than yourself, obviously, but who pulls the actual New Year shows together, sort of thing?
Well, it used to be Ken, and I sometimes did a bit towards it and stuff, but there's a guy called Honky Magoo who does some HBR stuff.
Right.
He also runs a podcast called Linux Lugcast. He was very keen that this should continue and got behind making it so every year, and he takes on board the whole audio and does the editing on that. This year he had a helper to come and help him with the notes. The notes that go with it are amazingly good.
They're really good.
The guy who goes by the handle HP Lovecraft, he friend of Cthulhu, no doubt. He was obviously listened to everything that was said, and I went and looked up the links for it and stuff, so it's absolutely full of really, really good links. So
it's incredible. I love to listen to the New Year shows. I'd kind of forgotten about it, and obviously I don't know what it must take a heck of a lot of work to put together, and whether, because I'm sure, do we not normally, like myself, I'm snowed under these days, so I've not been able to post any shows. But I'm guessing this is the New Year shows were a wee bit later this year, so maybe things have got difficult understandably.
Around about the same time this year as they were the previous year.
Right,
I think
right.
It takes Honky a fair bit to obviously interleave with all his other work and stuff. But we applaud him enormously for doing it. It's usually, I think the joke was, it's August, it's time for the New Year show. I don't know who made that joke, but somebody did.
Anyway, it's terrific, and really, really enjoy it when it comes out. So I'm looking forward to getting the next one. I'm listening to, I'm on 3668 at the moment, so I've still got a wee bit to go. I'm a bit behind.
Yeah, no, I'm way behind with podcasts. It's a nightmare trying to keep up with them. And I don't want to drop any because I'm enjoying them all. Oh well, just turn up the speed until I can manage times two or something.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to chat again. We'll do it again sometime when.
Yes, indeed. When look forward to it.
The year has moved on, and we're you're not too busy once you get back to work.
No, let's hope that things become a bit more sane, because it feels like things have not been sane for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes. We don't want to go off on that subject.
Oh, no.
Because that's another 3 hours on that one, probably.
Absolutely.
But that's very good. So thank you very much. And goodbye to everybody. And don't forget to listen to Hacker
Public
Radio.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Hi, everyone. Dave here. I'm just adding this bit of audio to introduce the postscript of this show, which is the recording of music off the Scion Series 3C that Mr. X sent me. I have noted the details in the show notes, so enjoy!
Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons
Attribution 4.0 International License.